Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It's program number 744, March the 10th, 1986. I was up at De Anza College this past week for National Women's Week. I've been going there the past few years and spent an evening with people who listen to World Watchers almost every week, and also David Emery and Nip Tuck. I have a program on KFJC 3 hours a week, similar to the material that I have in World Watchers. It overlaps the content of it. And then they do one program a month called Radio Free America, where they take these various subjects and just talk about them for 3 hours in depth. So being with this audience who are literally saturated with these names and circumstances that interrelate with each other, that seem far apart but connect, it was just a wonderful time to be with all of them. I enjoy it so much, and I enjoyed meeting new people that are radio listeners and old friends, and we'll be getting together soon again. It really is invigorating to see that there are people out there who can absorb and handle this material and grow with it and understand the complexities of it, or if they're not at that stage yet, they're at least willing to listen. I noticed in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning that the person examining the bodies of the dead astronauts to be brought up is none other than Dr. Michael M. Bodden from New York City. They described him as being on leave as Deputy City Medical Examiner of New York. He's been under all kinds of questioning for the past 4 or 5 years on questionable homicides. Were they murders, not homicides? How he covered up certain murders? He's been involved in many scandals in New York City. So while he's on leave, he's been given the job for NASA, I suppose, to take care of the autopsy of the astronauts. The important thing about Dr. Bodden was he was the chief medical examiner for the House Select Committee on Assassinations. He works for the CIA. He's the one who ordered the cremation of Nelson Rockefeller. He was out at La Costa, California, and you know what that base is, with the mafia, Mo Dalitz, and the familiar team that were again involved and named with Robert Mayhew in connections with Paul Laxalt to the Kennedy assassination and the Howard Hughes organization. He was out there when Nelson Rockefeller was given some poison, and he ordered him cremated right away from the telephone out in California. Dr. Bodden is a very questionable character. I don't know why they need him on this case, except to keep increasing his bona fides and making him more prominent on these big national events that take place. So when you see his name there, you can know that there is more to the shuttle program, and as it develops, this is my sixth week on the shuttle program. It is a terribly big story, and it has many tentacles and links going back to the Kennedy assassination, which was a coup d'etat in this country, and developing through these various processes. And I believe what took place down there at Cape Canaveral was one more escalation of the Defense Department Star Wars maneuvers, and I'll be detailing that for weeks to come. Next week, I'm going to go into details about the Challenger, the deaths that Jesse Jackson cited in the Houston Post as possibly averting nuclear disaster, and cite all the reasons that I've listed on why this ship really didn't mean to survive. The shuttle program was designated to collapse as early as 1983, by September 83. And in an article called, a magazine called Space Flight in 1982 in May, there was a title, The Military Role of the Shuttle, by Gerald L. Barrowman. And that sealed the death literally on the shuttle system. Its first espionage work, as I say, was in September 83. I'll detail that for you. And then all the things that were meant to go wrong that would go wrong, it was a literal time bomb. But the scary part is the next ship was to have plutonium on it, and I'm going to detail the dangers of that. Jesse Jackson asked the question in this article, as I say, from the Houston Post, did their deaths avert a nuclear disaster? Explosion could wipe out all of Florida. And I think that is one of the possibilities on why there's several why this took place, but this could be like Scotch tape at the Watergate Hotel, where that Scotch tape broke open the COINTEL program, the MK Ultra program, the Tom Charles Houston program, the Defense Department plans for literally making a police state out of the United States. And if the plutonium went down, it's the most poisonous gas in the world, and went with the next shuttle, it could have affected everything on planet Earth and certainly the part in Florida. And I'll do more on the plutonium and also Bernard Goetz and his links to the space program and plutonium, and I'll update that for you. That is something to come next week. I'm just rushing through it now. The Monterey Herald had a story this morning, a syndicated column, it's from news which goes around the country. Astronauts demand assurance of safety. And one of the astronauts, Mr. Young, John Young, now chief of NASA's astronaut office, was complaining about the safety of the shuttle, and many of you read the story. And he said that about the seals being uncertain, and he said there is only one driving reason that such a system, that such a potentially dangerous system, would be allowed to fly. Now, that is a cover story. It is not true. There is not only one driving system that it would fly, specifically business or commercial reasons. If you had millions of dollars in that payload and in that ship, you wouldn't jeopardize it for the sake of 2 hours later of leaving in the afternoon. That is impossible. That it would be a business thing, because that would be bad business policies. And I've cited the switch from the civilian or the teacher in space to the military. And also now we're going into the severance of the military taking care of the Star Wars and that part of space and the weapons, and the space shuttle will go into what they call commercialization, which is the privatization of space, which is what the Heritage Foundation recommended. And then it'll be like IG Farben, a private company running synthetic rubber, but the government, the Gestapo, sends them the slave labor so that the factories are run by private business, but the manpower is sent by the government, so that the huge control of the space shuttle, the program, the commercialization, such as Rockwell, who wants to pay the entire $2.5 billion to replace this particular Challenger, and then you get the Hughes Aircraft and McDonnell Douglas and Boeing, and they will supply the machinery, and the businesses will be run by private business, such as, say, the Hughes Medical Institute, the DuPont Foundation. That you'll give it to various businesses, such as DuPont, ITT, and the medical pharmaceutical laboratories, and then we're in real trouble. This ship was meant to destruct, and I believe that had it gone one more time, and I'll do more on this next week, on that cloud of plutonium particles that would have gone over into the southeast part of the country and then into the water there, if this had exploded on the next shuttle, and maybe the pushing of this, knowing that it could not survive all of the things that happened to it and that it was going to break down anyway, is an indication that somebody was aware of the dangers of the next one if this one succeeded. It would be guaranteed that what I stated would happen by the next one. So I'll do some of that next week. I don't want to do that right now. Also, I wrote for Paul Krasner, his next realist. We are combining again. I did a short article this time. It's about 2,000 words on the links of the Korean Airline 007 to the shuttle Challenger. The captain of the Challenger was Admiral Truly, Richard Truly, and he monitored the KAL as it went down with Larry McDonald on it. Then Richard Truly has now, Admiral Truly, has been put in charge of the shuttle program. If that sounds complicated for you, I'll detail more of it next week. Also, give you an idea of the article I've done for Paul, and I suppose it'll be out in a month or two. Now, I want to give you three addresses. I hope you have your pencil ready. Get it ready, because there are three subscriptions to publications that you should be getting, or information that is available that is important to my research, and I can't put all of it on the air. There is a publication or a group called the Committee to Stop the Moral Majority and Fascism in San Francisco, and they have printed information on AIDS as a biological warfare, on the Rockefeller Foundation. They have a book that I've cited on the air before, Men Against Hitler, that is available, and a lot of material on Reverend Moon. I don't know what they are charging, if they will copy all this for you, but some of it is available. A newspaper on AIDS, and write to them, 495 Ellis Street, E-L-L-I-S Street, number 1271, San Francisco, California, 94102. This is the Committee to Stop Moral Majority, and they've changed their name, and fascism. And they're investigating the Moonies in the Bay Area and the anti-gay groups, and they have a lot of valuable material to share. Another important publication to write to is called The Freedom Fighter. It's available through the American Information Network. I'm going to give it just once. If you don't get it right, you can call me or send a self-addressed stamped envelope, or send a, yeah, you can send that and get a sheet that accompanies this broadcast, and I'll print it out for you. The Freedom Fighter, through the American Information Network, 2140 West Chapman Avenue, number 223, Orange, California, 92668. You can get 10 copies of this magazine. It's about 10 pages long, for $3.50 on AIDS. And once you get it, I think you would like to get more to send to your friends. There's a quotation in there that I've seen quite a few times recently regarding AIDS. It's from Bertrand Russell, and he wrote a book called The Impact of Science on Society. And this is the quotation. At present, the population of the world is increasing at 58,000 per day. War so far has no great effect on the increase, which continued throughout each of the world wars. War has been disappointing in this respect, but perhaps bacteriological war may prove effective. If a Black Death could spread throughout the world once in every generation, survivors could procreate freely without making the world too full. The state of affairs might be unpleasant, but what of it? And this is important because of the way I believe that the space shuttle program is going to be given over to the process of developing AIDS and affecting crops, and I'll tell you why as I go on later in the evening. But this is something you should be sending for. The third thing you should send for is write to the National Education Association in care of the Instruction and Professional Development, 1201 16th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036, and ask for their book, Extremism in the United States, a teaching resource focusing on neo-Nazism. Now, Krista McAuliffe, the astronaut that went down in that shuttle, was president of the chapter of the NEA in New Hampshire. She was very liberal. She was pro-Kennedy and an outspoken person during the peace march. And what part of the organization that she was active in published this book in 1972 for teachers. And the contents includes the rise of National Socialism in Germany, the Nazi movement in the United States in the 30s, the American Nazi movement in the post-war World War II, the Rockwell connections, the neo-Nazi organizations today. This is a 200-page book. They don't have a price there. They sent it to me. You might send a contribution of a few dollars. It's about neo-Nazism, how people join, how they work in Europe, where they are in the United States, on anti-Semitism and prejudice. And they have copies of articles, such as one in USA Today, regarding Nazi leaflets left at school, considered not a crime, and the story of that fellow Joseph Hoover who was murdered in Oroville, California. I wrote about an article about him in 1982, linked to the Nazi movement, and he's linked to, of course, the Manson family and the possibility that they were going to help Charles Manson escape from prison. The book Extremism in the United States on the cover has neo-Nazism, anti-Semitism, anti-pluralism, National Socialism, Skokie, racism, fascism, George Lincoln Rockwell, genocide, totalitarianism, and so forth. It has a large list of subjects, and Krista McAuliffe, as I say, was president of that chapter. And this is what the NEA has been publishing and getting out for the past years. And I wasn't aware of it until she passed away. And then somebody, a friend from Midwest, sent me this information, and I sent for that book. I'm going now into a subject away from the shuttle for just a few moments to something which I believe is very serious and important. And you're going to have to listen very carefully to get these connections. Or you can send, as I say, for a bibliography of this program. And I will chart these out for you if you want to see them. This has to do with the exposure this past week of Kurt Waldheim, is having Nazi background. This came out March the 4th, 1986. His role in Greece and in Yugoslavia in 1940 to 1944. This investigation, according to the newspapers, has been going on since November of 1985 for the past 6 months, a little earlier, like September 85, until just when the story broke. So there was a six-month investigation of Kurt Waldheim with documents to show his role with a high officer who was later hung as a war criminal in Greece and Yugoslavia, and that broke on the 4th. Now, just a few days before the story broke about Waldheim's connections, and Waldheim, I'm sure most of you know, was known mainly as the ambassador from Austria to the United Nations, and most of his past isn't well known, except that he started law school in 1944. According to, if you look up the almanacs, he was born in Austria, and he started law school in 44, and there's that big gap that we'll go into. Now, February 27th, 1986, just 5 days before the story broke in the headlines about Kurt Waldheim, Lady Fleming passed away, a woman who, she lived in Greece. She married an Englishman, the doctor who discovered penicillin. She passed away. She was born in Greece, and from 1941 to 44, when the Nazis occupied Greece, she was very active in the resistance movement. She provided false documents to help Jews escape and others escape, and she was also active against our CIA Greek Nazi coup that the United States put in power in 1967. In 1971, she was arrested. She was held in jail for 16 months. And we had a military, the United States, had a military dictatorship, 1967 to 1974. And she was a military prison. Now, Lady Fleming had something in common with Kurt Waldheim. Their politics weren't in common, but they were in Greece at the same time period where he would be working with the Gestapo in that time period, with one of the most notorious leaders of the Gestapo in Greece. So they covered this time slot, 1941 to 44, in Greece together. And he was a Nazi. She was anti-Nazi. And she died, as I say, just 4 days before the story broke, but they'd been working on it for 6 months. Now, he's running for the president of Austria just at the time she dies. The election will be in May. And so if she saw that these papers came out of his role in Greece, because he was much younger then, and she was active in the underground, she very nicely would have made those connections. Now, March the 2nd, 1986, this past week, 2 days before the Waldheim Nazi connections broke, Olof Palme in Sweden was gunned down. So Lady Fleming and Palme, one died of a heart attack in Greece on the 27th, and then 3 days later, Olof Palme, the Prime Minister of Sweden, was gunned down. Now, Palme was very, very close, and I'll give some more details of his background I briefly mentioned last week. He was very close to Dag Hammarskjöld. They're both from Sweden. They're both from the ruling upper class, the elite upper class. Dag Hammarskjöld was head of the United Nations I'll give you the year time span. He was killed in 1961 on a peace mission over the Congo. But his father was prime minister of Sweden, a job that Olof Palme would have for 4 different elections. So the two men came from Sweden. Hammarskjöld, active in peace movements, identical to Olof Palme, and killed over the Congo. He was on the way down to the Congo February the 12th, 1961. Patrice Lumumba was killed down there on February the 12th, 1961. Pardon me. And 7 months later, Hammarskjöld is on the way down there to meet Mr. Shambe, and that was his mistake. He should have known when Patrice Lumumba was killed to stay away, but 7 months later he is willing, this peacemaker from Sweden, to visit with Mr. Shambe, and his plane was blown up or blown down, whichever way you want to see it. So Olof Palme was anti-fascist, Dag Hammarskjöld was anti-fascist. They both worked for peace movements, and they were visible to people all over the world, not just in their home area, for the things that they stood for. Now, the stories that broke about Kurt Waldheim, one was I got from the Houston Post, from a good friend there, And I'm sure you saw most of your papers that now that he's a candidate for president in Austria, the stories linking him to General Alexander Lohr, L-O-H-R, are in the news. Lohr was a man who committed tremendous atrocities. He ordered 42,000 Greek Jews to death camps and killed thousands of Yugoslavs. And Waldheim was in Yugoslavia and in Greece when this was going on. Waldheim did not deny his membership in the Brown Shirts, the Nazi SA. He was part of the Nazi Student Union, and he was active as a youth with the Nazis. And Mr. John Tagliabue, the same New York Times writer who's been covering the trial of Ajab, confronted Waldheim with the documents about his past that Laura's staff from 1942 to 43, at the time of the military operations against Yugoslavia, partisans ordered mass deportations of Greek Jews. And they accused Waldheim of concealing his story and even suggested that the people who approved of him as the head of the United Nations used it as blackmail when he's UN secretary. The man accusing him of that, interestingly enough, is Edgar Bronfman, the Bronfman of the head of Permanex, a team that had been so successful in killing so many heads of states before under the Permanex organization. He's part of the World Jewish Congress, and now he's accusing Waldheim of being a Nazi after Permanex, that outfit that I've described so many times, was so successful in setting up assassination teams for other heads of states. So the story of Waldheim is out. There's a picture of him in the uniform. San Jose Mercury had it. I'm sure many of you have it. In 1943, at an airstrip with the Italian commanders, and he worked, as I say, between Yugoslavia and Greece. Now, the Jewish group, this United Jewish World Jewish Congress, has a lot of information about him and the role that he worked as assistant when these 40,000 Jews were put at death camps and his activities. They were sent from Greece to Auschwitz in Poland, and from Yugoslavia, the Nazi massacres were taking place about the citizens. So that Waldheim's past is all being aired. It's been quiet all this time. He's going to be president of Austria with our precious Helene von Damm over there. And if you look at your almanac for 1972 or any year you want, I looked up Kurt Waldheim, Secretary General of the United States. It said he was born in Lower Austria. He was a teacher. Waldheim earned a law degree at the University of Vienna in 1944. So he's born and then he has a law degree and there's absolutely no past. But all the others described in there have a past. As a matter of fact, Dag Hammarskjöld, and this is the important point, is that Waldheim succeeded Dag Hammarskjöld. There was an interim in there where you thought became Secretary General of the United States, but that interim just allowed or made way after Dag Hammarskjöld was dead for Waldheim to step in. The almanac describes Dag Hammarskjöld, and he's was a close friend of Olof Palme. He was born in Sweden, an aristocratic family. His father was prime minister during World War I. He went in the foreign ministry, and he was elected Secretary General in 1952. And the article goes on, he greatly, he influenced his office and extended the scope of his UN office. He visited Peking in 1955. I'm sure that would be a no-no. And he ended his 1961 Congo mission in a plane crash where he died over northern Rhodesia. He created the International Peacekeeping Force in the Middle East, and I'll do more about him later. Now, of course, Simon Wiesenthal gets in the act. I've done many broadcasts on Wiesenthal and his Gestapo connections. The San Francisco Examiner, March 6th, has a story from Vienna. Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal says charges that former UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim was a Nazi are untrue. Can you believe this? Oh, yeah, I guess you can if you've heard me long enough. He questions how Waldheim became ignorant of mass deportation of Jews from Greece. And I'm sure that Mrs. Fleming wouldn't be ignorant of that. He said Wiesenthal, and the article goes on, Wiesenthal, whose documentation center for tracking down Nazi war criminals is based in Vienna, said yesterday there is nothing at all incriminating against Waldheim. According to what he read in the article in the New York Times, Wiesenthal made the statement to Austria's two major political parties. In other words, he's giving the Jewish kosher seal of approval. Waldheim is all right. And he said there's nothing incriminating about him. The New York Times reported his membership in these units and in the Wehrmacht unit in Greece when thousands of Jews were deported to Polish concentration camps. Now, in Simon Wiesenthal's book, he said he never looked for war criminals among the Wehrmacht and any part of the German Nazi German army because they were only taking orders. He only studied members of the Gestapo. So if he wasn't in the Gestapo, if the Wehrmacht sent these 42 or 44,000 people to their death, that was okay. Wiesenthal said with an interview to the Jewish news agency that Waldheim never belonged to the Nazi party or one of its branches. Can you believe that? 1941 to 44, working with this top general who was hung as a war criminal. And then all of a sudden, Wiesenthal says, oh, he didn't know anything about it. He might have known some were deported, but he had nothing to do with it. Now, along those same lines are working with these same people is that notorious Nazi who's lived in California all these years, Mr. Arturkovich. He's been sent to Israel to stand trial. He's from Yugoslavia. He's been charged in killing 200,000 or more people as Minister of the Interior and Minister of Justice in Yugoslavia in the Nazi puppet state of Croatia from 1941 to 45. So that Mr. Waldheim went between Yugoslavia, where Arturkovich was responsible for these atrocities, to Greece, where these atrocities were taking place, and he still wants and will be the new head of the government in Austria. But I can't believe that Olaf Palme at this time wasn't certainly aware of what is going on. A story from the Kansas City Star, a friend listener sent to me, trial will open a bloody chapter. This has to do with the Arturkovich trial. So with the Arturkovich connections to Yugoslavia and the Greek connections of Waldheim between the two areas going back and forth, and the six-month investigation on Waldheim that broke with these facts about where he was and his place with these death squads, I'm wondering if Lady Fleming died and if Olaf Palme died because the elections in Austria are so important to the grand plan or scheme of things, and that they are knowledgeable about them and suffered or lived through these various experiences. The article about Lady Fleming from the New York Times, February 27th, describes her as a woman who was the foe of the Nazis and the army junta. And it describes Lady Fleming. She was the wife of the British scientist. Lady Fleming was a member of the parliament and the Socialist Party of Prime Minister Andreas Papandreou. Described her as dying of a heart attack as a result of a kidney failure. She was 73. But the fact is that she was very active in this time period where Waldheim lived in her country. The article, the obituary says, a graduate of Athens University. She went to Britain and was married just a short time before her husband passed away. But she was born in Constantinople, raised in Greece. During the 1941-44 Nazi occupation of Greece, she joined the resistance movement. She helped provide supplies and information to the British, Australian, New Zealand officers. And she was helpful to the people who wanted to escape. And after the war, those very resistance people were gunned down and held like prisoners and dogs all over Europe and in Greece. And this article goes on how she helped Greek Jews to escape, and she was equally active with the military regime. As I said before, from 1967 to 74, she played a key role in Amnesty International. She returned back to Greece and worked with the Greek Committee of Amnesty. Covert Action, the magazine, the last issue, November 25th, Winter 86, has a capsule history of Greece and the Nazis in it, and it describes from 1941 to 44, Greece is under Nazi occupation, and the armed resistance is carried out mainly by ELAS, E-L-A-S, which was a resistance movement. And as soon as the war was over, those people were the ones that were tortured and rounded up by the so-called Allied forces that got Greece liberated, and it seems that the Nazis, not only in France with Klaus Barbie, but all over the world and also in Southeast Asia, in Manchuria, and in Japan, the very top war criminals in China, Chiang Kai-shek, they began working with the fascists who did the crimes and forgot about the fact of the people who really wanted liberation. Interestingly enough, Covert Action describes the Greek military junta and their activities. But after the war, the Greek National Police in 1947, the year our CIA was formed, this article in Covert Action said, is that they had an instruction manual, 38 pages, which they used, and it told how they took corpses and went after the resistance movement at that time and decapitated their bodies, put the heads in sacks, and transported them for public viewing. This is described in a current book that came out, and I'll give you the title on the sheet, separate sheet that accompanies this broadcast. But it concludes the statement by saying, in 1947, Greece was a training ground for the newly created CIA for Vietnam, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and the Contras to come much later. We'll take a one-minute break and then continue on this before I get to some of the shuttle complexities.